Welcome. You're listening to the Mac Observer's Background Mode. This is your host, John Martolero. And this week, my guest is the founder of Otherworld Computing, Larry O'Connor. Larry, welcome.
Hey, thanks for having me on, John.
It's nice to have you on the show. I'm sure the listeners are familiar with you. I've been personally doing business with your company for years and years. You are legendary. Your company is legendary in the world of computer equipment, focusing on Apple and great customer service. And I'd like to hear more about your story and how it all came to be.
Yeah, sounds like fun. We're certainly here because of you and because of all of our customers. And that's one thing, you know, that we never forget. And that is why we are here, because of, you know, great customers like yourselves and the opportunity to provide those solutions and different upgrades.
For those very few people who may not be familiar with Otherworld Computing, tell me a bit about the company, your size, your products, the people, and your focus.
Sure. We're completely based in the U.S. You know, we have about 240 employees today. You know, we focus on storage solutions, both internal and external, you know, for Mac. And it's also almost by default compatible with PC, but definitely with a focus on the Mac first. The other big area of focus is upgrade solutions that enable people to do things with their Mac, either add additional ports or, you know, service their system so they can keep them going and make them faster, make them better. You know, little things where Apple throws up a wall, perhaps, you know, we like to make it easy to get over that wall so that people can get the most from their Macintosh and then keep that system going for as long as possible. I mean, Apple builds great hardware. Sometimes it's a little bit hard to honestly make minor fixes and do minor service along the way for that hardware. And we're really glad to have the solutions and the different upgrades so that people can keep that hardware they've invested in, you know, going at, you know, full speed, and in some cases, you know, stuff from a few years ago, even faster than the stuff that's shipping today with the right upgrades.
Sometimes a company feels distant in the sense that it's hard to communicate with a company, or when you do call them, it's hard to work with them. But you guys have done a stellar job throughout the years in not only great customer service and before and post-sales support, but your technical blogs and the way you communicate your technical enthusiasm and interest to the community has just been incredible. So if somebody's wondering about whether, say, a particular Mac really does support, you know, all the memory that Intel says it will, you know, you guys maybe comment on that and guide the users along. And you have these great videos, too, for installation. It's just amazing.
And we enjoy this stuff. I mean, we're users as well. I mean, we are Apple fans. Or the majority of our employees, pretty much everybody on the team, has a Mac. And, you know, and for off-record purposes, you know, we are our own customer base as well. So it's something that we are very close to. When you talk to somebody that's not a script, you know, certainly there's different information, different, you know, standard troubleshooting. But, you know, these folks know the product and they listen to you and understand, you know, where you're at in the process, as opposed to just trying to go down some artificial checklist. You know, we're users too. We care, and you know, we're definitely into this stuff and where we can share what we know and help people get, again, more from, you know, what those Macs can do. We're happy to do so. And the blog's a lot of fun. You know, it's, you know, we really do dive in, and it's, you know, more than just a cursory look.
Back in 2008 at Macworld, I had a chance to get together with you in person and interview you, and I wrote a feature story. And one of the things that stuck out for me, amongst a lot of things, was that you commented about how you wanted to create a stable and profitable and fun place for your employees to work, and that you had resisted attempts by others to come in and, you know, buy out your company and roll the cash up and just sort of, you know, ransack the company. And sure, you're still doing that 10 years, or, well, let's see, yeah, almost 10 years later, you're still doing that. How did you come across the personal value or notion that an employer is alien in some cases? You know, when we look around the internet and read stories about companies, it's a little bit alien to find a CEO, a founder who says, you know, I want to create a fun, profitable, safe, enjoyable place for my employees. Where did that come from?
You know, maybe just as a Midwestern guy, I don't know, you know, what to say other than it's, you know, to a certain degree, it's common sense. I mean, it's, It's not about building an organization that can be sold. It's having an organization, a team that, again, is able to support the products, the solutions that people need. And its success is dependent on customers actually needing and wanting the products and wanting to support us. So we're very grateful and thankful for our customers out there. I mean, that is why we're here. And in terms of the organization, we enjoy what we do. I still enjoy what we do today. I mean, it's hard to believe now we're getting close to 30 years. But it's, again, from a, it's a different way to approach. I mean, there's so many companies, I know a lot of these, a lot of great ideas that people start these companies, but they go through different, and it's an accelerated path. I mean, it's less about the product being out there in the customer's hands and more about finding somebody to buy the company. And unfortunately, there's, I think, a lot of great technology that people just don't see as a result of that. Things get bought up like commodities, and what was started now is no more. So yeah,
when you have a passion for what you're doing, and we in the Apple community know that well, it's a driver that you want to stay involved and continue to do the things that you do, as opposed to just retire to the Bahamas and live on the beach and not do anything important anymore.
No, we can make a difference. And I'd say ultimately certainly there are easier ways out, but it's not the kind of change that is meaningful. And as long as we can continue to make a difference, we keep things, we'll keep things cranking, which
are you continuing to grow?
Absolutely. Positively. That has been if we're not growing, then that's something that if the company wasn't growing, if there weren't opportunities to continue to move things ahead and have new solutions and whatnot, it'd be hard for this place to still be fun, at least for me. And I go back a couple of years, we actually went from just having our Woodstock location to opening up locations in Austin for engineering and design, and up in Nevada to better support our West Coast and Southwest region in terms of overall distribution and fulfillment.
I want to ask you about those locations in a minute, but I wanted to jump in here real quick and ask you that you told me that from time to time you've had offers to have a company bought. Have those been really, really persistent and serious, or is it just occasionally and not very serious?
It's over the years, I would say the frequency continues to go up. I mean, we have a longer and longer track record, and we've gotten a little bit bigger over those years. So yes, those are certainly still out there. Although we've been the one mainly doing the buying, and even there, it's not, not buying up companies that are commodities, but other great organizations that makes for an even greater whole. So no, they're still out there, but nonetheless, I certainly would never want to see OWC not be OWC.
I second that. I third that. I fourth that. has Apple's lapse over the last couple of years in Mac products concerned you? There was a long gap, as you well know, on the Mac Pro, the MacBooks until last fall, and the Mac Mini, and the iMacs went for a long time without an upgrade. Were you continuing to grow? Through that period, were you concerned about Apple and how it might affect your business? And
we still have huge,
what happened?
Sure, we still have huge opportunity out there. I mean, there's a very large base of potential customers out there that still has no idea that we exist, and the kinds of solutions that we offer for Mac. People who are from day one are told that how you buy the machine is how it has to be retired. And we see this every day because on our Mac sales side, we do a lot of used systems, and it's insane how many of those systems people effectively retire that have still the base, the original hard drive in them. They have the original memory, which may be the very minimum that it could have come with. And these are systems that some people, maybe they upgraded the processor. They spent a lot of money. They have these Macs, and they never got their true, were able to take advantage of their true potential. We continue to grow just by growing our customer base. And again, there's a lot of folks out there that can be helped by our different solutions. But in terms of the Apple market, the creative space we've been really worried about and kind of concerned with, both, just as a personal interest in Apple and, what, the long-term means, for our creative customers. And we have, solutions that have been more and more able to support the PC side. And it's something that's always kind of in the back. It's been in the back of my mind, honestly, for, 20 years. Every couple of years, Apple used to do something that I go to bed that night and say, I'm done with Apple. We're going to be a PC company. But then I get a good night's sleep and I'll get over whatever, whatever it was, different conversations prevail or the situation, you get over whatever the momentary, bump in the road was. But
a lot of developers have that feeling too. There's some WWDCs where the developers feel like, oh my God, I have so much to do to get my app revised. I saw Greg Scone in an interview with our Jeff Gamet recently, and Greg said, this is a low homework year, meaning that, oh my God, there's lots of cool stuff out there, but I don't have to rewrite my apps like I did with iOS 7. I've seen that.
It is nice to have a year where they're working on improvements, not completely reinventing the wheel for reinvention's sake. And it's really nice to see some better hardware. Somehow that's kind of catching up to the rest of the world out there as well. I mean, the big thing on the creative side, folks have, the Mac Pro, it's not going to say it's a horrible machine, but it misses the mark in terms of what the customer base wanted, just from the point of view of the GPUs.
Now be careful now, because I'm talking to you on a Mac Pro. You're going to make it crash.
Is it a trash can or is
it? Yeah, I have a 2013 Mac Pro. I'm using it right now to talk to you.
And you know what? It's a great machine.
For what I use it for. For a writer. Yeah.
It's got a lot of juice. I mean, it's where it hurts people though is, it's still shipping today and it was a rare admission for them to say that, hey, we need to do something different.
Yeah.
But I was really excited and then I was really disappointed when they basically, for all practical purposes, said, well, we just started listening. And we've just started understanding what you really want, and we need another year to hopefully give you what you want. I would have thought they would have had that figured out some time ago, so that perhaps at WWDC we would have seen a glimpse. But not having the ability to upgrade even the GPUs inside, not having better SSD support, not having better memory, support. It's a great machine for a lot of things. The moment you plug it in, but fortunately, you pay a lot for these systems, and not having the ability to kind of move them forward over the years is a problem. And these new machines where they solder everything, I really do hope they get away from that. Again, just from the basis that you pay a premium to have a Mac. Things do change, and new opportunities for newer technology, whether it be faster GPUs, even processors and such, that does occur over with the passage of time, and having a great machine that suddenly is obsolete because you can't replace a component that used to be modular. That's kind of a problem. Memory being soldered is a real negative. And the SSDs being soldered, just as a user, that means if I get a computer today, these new MacBook Pros, and I don't buy enough space, I don't want to pay the premium to have a 2 terabyte or even a 1 terabyte drive today because I don't think I'm going to need it. A year from now, all of a sudden, I have to buy a new machine.
Why do you think Apple does this? Is it for manufacturability? Is it for keeping the user from tinkering and doing something disastrous? Or is it just money grab?
That's a really good question. I will say that when we released our upgrades for actually each of the different lines, we watched the used market, and the used market actually showed a positive uptick after these upgrades became available. I mean, the ability certainly for the second generation user to have, and whoever's servicing these systems, have the ability to replace. I mean, SSDs fail. What used to be a lot of space 5 years ago is a lot less space today with higher resolution video and the megapixels on cameras, higher resolution picture photography continuing to prevail. So I don't know that it's necessarily a money grab. It could be just a misguided, understanding of what the cycle is. Or they see what they want to see. I will say that a lot of folks, a lot of first users, first owners, don't do upgrades. A lot of upgrading happens on the secondary cycle when the system is But I guess the point I'd raise there is people used to get a lot more for their Macs. I mean, 2 years into a Mac, the value used to be higher in these systems. You had more folks that would sell to buy new because they knew they could get for their existing system. And part of what supported aftermarket values in systems was the ability to be able to swap a drive, swap, you know, increase memory, whatever it may be, so you could keep it up to date. Today, it's, you know, that dynamic shifted a little bit, and I think it's long-term. I really do believe it hurts Apple a lot that, even I don't care if they offer the upgrades. The fact that I think it's absolutely ridiculous that you have to buy the flash today that you think you're going to need, you know, down the road on the basis that, you know, there is no way to upgrade that down the road. So a $2,500 computer is all of a sudden is handicapped because it doesn't have a, you know, you've maybe got with a 256 gig drive today. Now, what really stinks, and I'll get off of this. This is why I think soldering drives is the absolute worst possible thing. The worst part of it to me is you get, you know, down the road, you know, you can make the choice to buy, you know, a giant flash drive today because you want to, you're going to have that computer probably for 3, 4, hopefully, you know, longer. And what Apple's done, I can keep going around, but the eGPUs, I mean, Apple opening the door and officially announcing support for external GPUs, you know, with 10.13, you know, that's going to give a lot of legs to these systems, being able to plug in an external video processor to add capability to existing systems down, I mean, ongoing to the future is going to be huge. It's, I mean, we're really, really excited. Now, we have things coming down the pipe that we weren't sure how official our support could be for those, you know, types of uses, but that's a huge, huge, huge positive benefit for the Apple community. But getting to the point, if you want more storage today and you spend that money for storage today, you know, you could get, you know, a year, year and a half from now, and, you know, what you pay to get, have a 2 terabyte drive, which is insane, you know, maybe it's a 4 or 6 terabyte drive you could get at that time. Forcing people to pay for storage today that they don't necessarily need today, that they might not need for a year and a half or 2 years, you know, really isn't good in a space where, you know, we've had a little bit of increase in cost on NAND over the last year, actually a lot of increase because of a relatively short term, we look at the long term history, you know, supply issue and manufacturing of NAND has resulted in supply being short of that demand. But long term, the stuff goes down in cost, and we're going to see, certainly by mid 2018, I think we're going to start to see things go back into a normal, you know, downward, direction again in terms of cost per gig. And I just don't think it's right that, you know, if you want to have a machine last, you have to make a big investment today, and heck, you could find out.
Right.
Down the road, you know, that's money you could have put towards a new system. That's money you could have, you know, put towards, you know, 2-3 times the storage, you know, when you actually needed it.
Okay. So that's quite a spiel. So
yeah, but my big thing is, you know, it's less about Apple having lots of new systems. I mean, processor technology processors haven't gotten, you know, they don't make the leaps year over year like they used to. Things are definitely advancing, but my bigger concern has been the way they've been closing the systems. Yeah. You know, you look at 2012 and prior models, you know, especially where you had memory that was upgradable, and, you know, those systems still fetch, you know, really good dollars today. They're still very flexible machines that people can deploy in a variety of different manners, fill a variety of different needs. And in a lot of cases, you know, you can do more with those machines and deploy them a ways and get more out of those systems than some of the latest. The Mac Mini, you know, what they did to that in 2014 was probably one of the biggest disappointments. The other thing
we need a new Mac Mini. I think the new Mac Pro, when it finally comes out, will have the expandability, upgradability that you're talking about. That's got to be a must. As you said, Apple's kind of woken up after a slumber and is understanding better than the needs of the Mac users. So we got to take a quick break here. I think this is a good time to break out. And when we come back, I want to ask you about WWDC a little bit and more about the details of Otherworld Computing. So, folks, we'll be back in 60 seconds. Stay with us.
Hello there, all you fabulous background mode listeners. I'm Kelly Gamont with the Mac Observer, and I just want to say a few words about how you can support all the things we do. If you're thinking about buying something from Apple, Amazon, or Mac Mall, just go to the Mac Observer's homepage where we have a section called Support TMO. Or you can just enter macobserver.com/Apple Store, all one word, and that will take you to our special page for Apple and our other affiliates. If you make a purchase from one of our partners this way, the Mac Observer receives a small compensation for sending business their direction. Pretty cool, right? And you don't pay a penny more. This small fee from our affiliates helps us continue to bring you TMO's daily news, reviews, tips, how-tos, and podcasts like this one. So the next time you're thinking about an online purchase, come to TMO's homepage and support the Mac Observer. Thanks. Back to you, John.
And we're back. I'm talking with Larry O'Connor, the founder, CEO of Otherworld Computing. Larry, how does MacSales.com fit in with Otherworld Computing? How did that happen? I was always curious about that.
You know, it was back in the 90s. You know, one of the things that I went from Otherworld Computing, we launched our first e-commerce site. We were selling Macs. I mean, back in that day, it was kind of that gray market space. And we were buying systems. We'd offer people upgrades. And it started as Mac sales. And I mean, both we were selling Macs and we were selling items for Macs. And it just kind of worked. So OWC has been Mac sales, or Mac sales has been OWC since, you know, pretty much the very beginning. And that's where the MacSales.com domain came from.
And you got something that people know about and want to stay with it, right?
Absolutely. Right. And then as we began to manufacture, you know, our memory, our processor upgrades, later solid-state drives, external solutions, all these fun things, one of the big challenges was explaining to folks that, you know, this is not a white box operation. You know, we're actually building these things. We're actually designing, we're actually engineering these solutions. And then, of course, we had resellers and everything else. We have a lot of great channel partners out there. A lot of folks in the U.S. and around the world also resell our products. And more recently, we've kind of, you know, Mac sales is Otherworld Computing. Then we've kind of put OWC, you know, more on top of our manufacturing, our actual engineering, you know, division, if you could say, and OWCDigital.com is a website where all of the manufacturer, all the engineering, all the cool things we do are showcased. Plus, you can find other folks that resell our goods.
In the previous segment, we talked about upgradability, but aside from that, how are you feeling about all the wonderful hardware announcements at the recent WWDC keynote?
It was a real positive thing. Again, Kaby Lake was, you know, nice on the new machines. IMAX, we didn't expect new IMAX until the fall, so seeing new IMAX, you know, at WWDC, that was fantastic.
Yeah, it was, and it was nice to see upgrades across the board for the Macs, the commitment to the Mac, and that whole flavor and atmosphere of the keynote sort of gives us good feelings about what Apple's going to do with the iMac Pro in the fall and December and the Mac Pro sometime next year. So, yeah, all of a sudden we have a good feeling about what Apple's up to.
Apple's given a lot more attention to the Mac this year than in quite some time, and to have WWDC, you know, get turned into a Mac event, and a, you know, real focus on new Mac hardware and iOS, of course, as well. But just so much Mac there was exceptionally refreshing. Usually the Mac in recent years, this is kind of, I almost call it an afterthought, but it's kind of a, you know, it's there, but, you know, not really a focus. And it was a great focus this year. And the iMac Pro, I do hope that machine, you know, right now Apple is suggesting that even memory is going to have to be configured at the factory there. It's slotted. It's standard memory. It's server memory. We actually offer that, the memory that machine uses. I really hope that customers don't have to cut the screen off to get to where those memory slots are. That's the biggest thing I've, you know, since, you know, Jobs, is, you know, not been with Apple, that has concerned me, is, you know, it's this form, this extreme form over function, even to the point where they delayed the original, the first major update to the iMac back in 2012. You know, they delayed it. They were a few months late, and they discontinued the previous generation model, you know, right before Christmas. They believed everybody would wait for this new thing, and really, the only physical difference between the old and new, other than the fact it was hard to get into, it was a little bit thinner if you looked at it from the side. And it's a beautiful machine. Apple built beautiful hardware, but, you know, where function is compromised, they have form. And certainly in the case of the iMac, where you can't tell the difference between the current iMacs and an iMac from, you know, 7-8 years ago, if you're looking at the front, and, you know, to me, that's generally, if you're productive, you're looking at your screen, so that's the part you see. It's kind of I do get concerned with, you know, this form focus where, you know, they've made it, and the serviceability has been compromised or simply taken away for the average user. just to make things, you know, a little bit thinner.
Yeah, and we'll worry about that. So I wanted to switch gears here for a second and ask you about the running of your business, because being a successful businessman, you know, I want to hear the story about the early evolution of Mac sales. You told me in 2008 when we met about how you started selling Apple II memory. I think you were in high school, right? And there wasn't an Apple II memory kit that you made you happy, so you started fabricating one. Tell me about that and how that became Mac sales.
Well, the biggest thing was at the time I couldn't drive. And memory was expensive, and now it took a while to see through the BIOS set. And on top of that, you know, taking your system to an Apple, I mean, today it's a little bit easier, but having to haul your Mac down to an Apple dealer to pay a lot of money to have them then install the memory that ideally, you know, they sold you, that was a little bit of a headache, because that was an hour and a half round trip, more or less, depending upon the day and the traffic. And to find out that installation took less time than it took to do the paperwork just to check the machine in. And on top of that, I mean, the worst part of it was, you know, they didn't do it while you waited. You know, the guy, I mean, I'll never forget walking in, the service guy typically had his feet up on the desk. I mean, just, you know, reading the trade publication, waiting for the next customer. But mm-hmm. you fill out the paperwork, they put your computer on a shelf, and tell you to come back in 2 or 3 days. And this was something that you could, when I learned you could do this, how easy was it to install memory, that I could potentially educate people on, you know, say,
how did you make your business known? Were you advertising in the Apple magazines like Call Apple and Soft Talk?
You know, way back, actually, this started online. Actually started online and using the America Online classified section. It was a free advertising space that America Online used to have. Nobody was using it, and certainly the computer hardware space, but people were looking at it. You could put an ad there. It would stay on the first page for about a week before you had to replace the ad. They had chat rooms that I'd go in, push the product, so to speak. But the mall classified on America Online back in the late 80s is where, you know, this originally got going. But start to take ads out in A-Plus magazine and Insider, and then later Macworld and, Mac User when we moved into the Macintosh space. But it was a pretty fun day, because, you know, by 91-92, if you try to put an ad up in America Online in the same area, you know, it would last about 10 minutes before it got pushed off the first page. So
was it a gradual but explosive growth in your business that allowed you to just keep on leveraging and keep on leveraging? How were you dealing with the early growth? Did you smoothly transition from that memory business, making enough money to actually just, you know, start a company and start doing other things? Did it evolve that way?
Yeah, for the most part, I mean, the volume was really, really good. And I mean, you know, we had a really good opportunity because memory prices had gone up really insanely in 88. In 89, the cost of memory came way down, but in the Apple space, everybody kept their price up like nothing had changed, like, you know, nothing going back then. Or there'd been an earthquake in 88 that affected the market, and Apple folks were apparently willing to pay that price. So when I came into the equation, I basically offered a cost that was about a third, you know, a quarter to a third of what everybody else was selling the same type of product for, plus it's providing, you know, free support for installation. Originally did written manuals and did phone support, and then started providing those videos and said, you know, you can do this. And it continued to crank. And storage was the other thing I personally needed, and found very, very expensive. And a company actually had gone out of business, had a really cool technology, and, you know, they didn't get the chance to deploy that product. But as a result, Otherworld Computing, way back in 92, got to be, you know, basically one of the very first companies to ever ship bus-powered external hard drives. At the time, they powered off the floppy port that both Apple IIs and Macs had, but... And we got into external SCSI hard drives, our NCDC Pro, and it goes back in history as one of the absolute very first bus-powered external drives for the Apple space.
I'm kind of familiar with small technical businesses. I've been around people like that. I've been involved in one myself. Did it ever occur to you that the business was growing so fast that you were over your head, that you needed help, that you wanted to rope in partners? How did that go?
You know, I give credit to my parents, my dad in particular. I'd worked for him for several years before, actually programmed for him back in 81, 82. And then I mainly did that entry, but nonetheless, you know, from a work ethic point of view, he was always, has always been a great, got a great, how to say, mentor, so to speak. And there was an opportunity, some folks came in and, you know, things were growing and, you know, in terms of growth, I mean, it certainly comes with its challenges. I mean, cash flow is always an interesting aspect when you're adding people and seeing volume go up. Plus, you know, it takes X number of days. Even back then, it was like a week. You know, if you, you know, took a payment from, if you ship the product today and it didn't charge their credit card at that time, it could be a week before those funds would come through. Today, it's much quicker. But all these things added up and had an opportunity to take an early investment from somebody. And, you know, for all sorts of different reasons, not necessarily, you know, the right reasons, but the right choice was made to say no to a group that came in. It would have made life easier, I think. But I tell you, hard work is absolutely hard work, and having yourself on the line, you know, makes everything, I think, you know, a little bit more meaningful. And certainly, it, you know, it's nothing makes, I mean, even things that, you know, seem like they might be make things easier. You know, that's everything. Everything has a cost and a consequence.
Were you ever concerned that maybe the company was growing so fast you didn't have the skills to be the CEO?
Yeah, that's I'll tell you what, at multiple points along the line, I still say that today. There's, you know, the right individual out there that can take things further than I can in the CEO role. You know, there's lots of things I enjoy doing here and have always enjoyed doing here. I mean, this is the case with just about everybody who's, you know, work with OWC, been a team member of OWC, you know, and we have folks who have been here 20 plus years. You know, everybody wears a lot of hats. I've worn, of course, every hat in the operation, and I enjoy what I do, and there's lots of aspects, that I say, that go on here, and always open to the possibility of somebody else doing a better job so far. You know, the team around me has suggested no to that, but, you know, it's, I always, look, whatever it takes to make this operation better, you know, we're always trying to, regardless of, you know, what the position is, always want to have smart people on. We have tons of people smarter than me, you know, how to say, involved in the operation thing, which is good. Because, again, it did whatever, I'm kind of rambling here, but whatever is right to see this operation continue to do what it's done successfully for going on 30 years, I am absolutely open to.
You talked in the earlier segment about how the company's continuing to grow. Do you ever have heartburn about what products you need to add to your portfolio in order to fuel that growth? I mean, I'm thinking about Amazon in their very, very early days. They sold books, and then they started selling hand tools, and they started selling food, and it was all out of control. But they made it work, and it's, you know, you can buy anything from Amazon now. Do you ever have a hard time thinking about how expansion, maybe into the PC world or other products, would fuel your growth or not in terms of the vision of your company?
You know, there's at different times. I mean, the solutions, it really comes down to what our customers' needs are, and the primary, you know, growth opportunity continues to be just expanding, you know, accessibility and people's knowledge of, you know, what we offer. So I've never had the real desire to say to branch out and, you know, dilute the brand into other areas. I mean, obviously Amazon is highly successful. It's a whole different thing. But the niche, if you want to call it a niche, that Mac Sales and OWC operate within, you know, we barely scratch the surface in terms of, you know, who can benefit from our solutions and, you know, growing by, you know, just getting the word out, continuing to take care of new customers, reach new customers. That's that's always been, the primary engine of this operation. And we see the PC side because the main reason we're even looking at PC today and continue to support the PC side. And we actually, the majority of our products actually are Mac and PC compatible, and we officially support for Mac and PC, although we still, you know, Apple is our primary conversation point. But to the point, the main reason the PC is there is because we have customers that have both platforms. We have customers that, you know, have shifted some of their Mac to the PC side. And I guess I go back in even into the 90s, you know, I won't call it a test necessarily. I'm really excited what Apple did with WWDC this year, just from the vantage point that they showed a real commitment to the Macintosh that I would say was visibly lacking, at least, you know, certainly externally, and that should go a long ways to reinforcing. Apple's still the
best.
I agree.
Well, back in the first segment, you talked about expansion into some other cities. I'm curious about what led you to open offices in Austin, and you mentioned Nevada. What's happening with that, and why? What was the need for that?
Yeah, we've actually been manufacturing in Texas since about 2006, 2007. And you know, over the last decade, it became harder and harder to get the kind of technical resource, the kind of the talent that we needed up in Illinois to take this organization further when it came to engineering, some of the software programming, and certainly in some of the marketing opportunities that we wanted to be able to pursue. We just couldn't get the folks, just couldn't get everybody that we wanted up in Illinois. And unfortunately, a lot of technology people seem to gravitate towards warmer cultures. Plus, you have the universities in some of these different states that cultivate that talent, and they stay. Certainly is the case with Austin and UT down here. And ultimately, people don't like to move to places where it's cold. And
I know. I agree. I understand. Who's in charge in Woodstock? Do you have a VP up there who kind of runs the operation?
Yeah, actually, Jennifer Soule, who's been on our team for 20-plus years, currently is our president in Woodstock. So she's a huge, she's my right hand. She does a fantastic job across the entire operation.
Cool.
We also recently brought on a gentleman who's our operations officer. He was... Yeah, I came out of a relatively high level for AMD and has brought great things, to the equation. And then the talent down here, I mean, it's like going on and on, but it's a really great team that continues to make us better and better every day. And
9 years ago, I asked you where you thought you'd be in 10 years, and I think you're there. Any thoughts on that, and any thoughts on where you think you're going to be in 10 more years?
Well, we better than doubled in the last 10, and I hope to continue to say that. Trend. I mean, regardless of where we are, I mean, it's not even necessarily about the about the revenue line and the number of employees. As long as we're continuing to provide, a decade ago, we certainly inspired and influenced a lot today. A lot of places were leading the way and putting technology out there that's on the edge, and others are copying. Others are certainly following the standard footsteps, and that's where we wanted, that's where we certainly continue to become more of today. And 10 years from now, we certainly want to have an even bigger position and say how things should be, as opposed to working with what's already there.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, we're just about out of time, but I want to ask you one more jackpot question. You've been very successful in growing Other World Computing and avoiding mistakes and avoiding a sellout and creating a fun, safe, profitable place for your employees and rolling the money back into the growth of the company. If you were to talk to a young entrepreneur about starting a business, what's the best advice you could give them, any new young businessman?
Sure. Roll up your sleeves and be prepared to work. I mean, there's no job that's beneath anybody. Everybody's on the same team. Do everything, know everything. Have a great respect for what everybody does in the organization, because you've done it. And as far as the service that you provide, I mean, ultimately, the only way you can be successful is if you're taking care of your customer and you have a solution, have a product, a service, something that your customer needs. It should be priced fairly, but it also fairly needs to cover your overhead. And if the equation isn't right, it's going to be hard to survive. And in terms of the different temptations out there, avoid at all possible costs, in my opinion. If you can, I mean, it's partners. People change over the course of time. Their interests, their motivations, what their needs are may change. People's hearts change over time as well. If you can go it alone, and you can do so without taking on outside investment, it gives you the freedom to. Ultimately, all the decisions, including the really hard ones, fall upon you. But you take responsibility for everything, and you're responsible to yourself. You can go it. I almost say go it alone. I mean, you go it alone on the concept, on the start of the company. But it's a team, and how you build that team around you that ultimately determines its success.
great. That's great advice. Thanks for sharing that. So we're about out of time. I want to thank you so much for being on the show and sharing everything you've told us about your career and how you grew the company and what Other World Computing is all about. And so finally, if the listeners would like to contact you or learn more or just, you know, say hi, how can they contact you?
Sure. And it's all about the people. And you can contact our organization. You visit maxsales.com or owcdigital.com. There's lots of information about who we are, what we are. You can check out any user live chat that asks questions about products. And if you'd like to reach out to me, I welcome that. OWC Larry is my Twitter account, so at OWC Larry without a space. Y'all feel free to ping me there as well.
Excellent.
Again, we're here certainly for you, and we're here because of you. And that's something I truly appreciate and thank you.
Thanks again. Thanks for sharing your story with us. It was a pleasure to have you on the show.
So,
listeners, thank you for coming by. We always appreciate you coming and listening, and I hope you enjoyed the show. We'll see you next week on the Mac Observer's Background Mode.